Hi, this is Vincent James, co-founder of Keep Music Alive and Kids Music Day. We're celebrating the third annual Kids Music Day this Friday, October 5th. And I'm talking here this morning with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And let me tell you something. You've heard the old quote, the old phrase, music hath charms to soothe the savage breast. Well, my titties are filled with music this morning because I get to talk to a man who cares a great deal about music. In fact, he wants to spread music like a beautiful disease across all the children in America, which is why he and his wife founded something called Keep Music Alive. It's a foundation. They have something called Kids Music Day, which is devoted to the importance of bringing music into the lives of children. And it's happening this Friday, October 5th. All over the country, there's events like performances and instrument donation drives and instrument petting zoos. I don't know what the hell that is, but we're going to find out. Celebrity endorsers include people like Julie Andrews and Nancy Wilson and Todd Rundgren. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk musically and delightfully with our guest in the neighborhood, Vincent James. Shalom, Vincent.
Shalom, Rabbi Saul. How are you?
You know, the usual aches and pains, but music takes my mind off of them, mostly.
Yes.
Mostly.
Yes, absolutely, mostly, right.
So when did you realize that you yourself was a musical person?
Well, you know, Rabbi Saul, it goes way, way back, so far back, and I sometimes have a hard time recollecting, but I think it was in my elementary school years. I remember a couple memories come to me. I was homesick from school one week, probably had the flu or something, and I tell you what, that little clock radio and that 70s music was my friend for that whole week. And that's one time where I really realized music was just really so important to me, and soon after I started playing the trombone and the piano. And there was another funny thing is when I was a kid, my friends used to always say to me, why are you always singing everything you say? Can't you just talk like a normal kid?
So you sang everything?
To them, it seemed like I did. I always have like a melody in my head and my mind. And, you know, some people see pictures, I see melodies.
Oh, that's it. Wow. A, that's kind of interesting. And B, okay, I get the piano, but trombone. What made you pick up a trombone?
Well, I have to tell you, that's an interesting story. So, fourth grade, elementary school, picture it. This is the first year where you get to, you know, pick an instrument you want to play. You tell your parents. All right, so I come home that first day, and I tell my mom and dad, I really want to learn how to play the guitar. And they're like, no, try again. So I go back to school the next day, and I come back home that afternoon, and I say, how about I learn how to play the drums? And they say, no, even louder. Like, no way. We're not making that noise in this house. So that is how we settled on the slide trombone. And I played that all the way through school, fourth grade, all the way through senior year of high school, marching band, concert band, orchestra, all the different types.
Wow. Did you ever, I mean, you have done professional music, but coming out of school, did you think you were going to be either in an orchestra or bands or a rock band?
Well, you know, I never really knew what I was going to be. I knew that music was going to be a part of my existence. I just didn't know how it was going to play out. When I was in high school, I used to, like, live in the band room. You know, like most kids, they would go to, like, cafeteria for lunch or if they had study hall, library or whatever. Me, I was parked in the band room, usually sitting at the piano most of the time.
Oh, you know, at one time the music teacher caught me playing with my organ, but that was something disgusting and rather different. But this is kind of... So you had music in your life with piano, with trombone. You started writing songs of your own?
Yes.
When did you write your first song?
I probably wrote my first song. I was about 16, and my first song was actually a co-written song that I had somebody who brought to me a set of lyrics, and they said, can you put music to this song? And I still remember the song. It was called Words for a Friend. And this is like the mid-70s, 75, 76, 77. I don't remember exactly. And Jackson Browne was really big at that time. And I think the music ended up coming out kind of a lot like a Jackson Browne song at the time.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So somewhere in a TED Talk that you gave, you said that you've had jobs all over the music industry. You even repped bands, you managed bands, didn't you?
Yes. For a moment, I thought you said I wrecked bands. Some of them I wrecked them. But
hopefully you did not do that. No, but like, what bands did you manage?
Well, so these were mostly, you know, local regional bands, you know, starting out. And there's a number of different bands playing, you know, different rock music. I helped to book them, promote them. Usually things would start going really well, and then somebody in the, you know, the band at some point would start to self-destruct, and I would just kind of have to walk away and say, you know what, I don't think I want to do this whole managing thing, because there's just too many personalities to manage, and I have a hard time managing my own.
Yeah, fair enough. So what was the impetus, though, to start a not-for-profit organization?
Well, it started out about 4 or 5 years ago, where, you know, we were looking around at what was going on in the music world. You know, they were talking about cuts in music and arts education was one factor. And then there was the factor of the whole digital revolution that we have upon us, right, where kids today growing up can listen to pretty much any song they want, whenever they want, however they want, as often as they want, and they don't have to part with any money, right? There's no babysitting money, lawn-cutting money, paper-out money, or anything changing hands there, right? Like we had to do when we were growing up, go to the 5 and 10 and put our money on the counter. So we kind of saw that music was being devalued in our minds, so we wanted to start something to kind of join the voices pushing the other way of highlighting just how important, you know, music education is for kids and for adults, the many benefits they can get from playing an instrument.
But it's funny, you could look at this the other way and say that kids who don't make a lot of money, who are really poor, for $10 a month, they can listen to basically any song that was ever recorded. Isn't that better, in some ways, than back in the day when, say, I was growing up and you had to pay $10 or $12 for one album at Sam Goody's?
Oh, absolutely, Rabbi Saul. I totally agree. I mean, it's a blessing that we have this digital revolution, but, you know, there are some side effects, and we're trying to mitigate some of the side effects. But I mean, I certainly love and enjoy the fact that, you know, I can listen to literally centuries worth of music, pretty much, you know, at my fingertips, and really be exposed to all different types of music that otherwise I may never have heard.
So, and I think you're saying in some ways that perhaps the freeness of that devalues it, but people still will pay God knows what to see musicians live in concert, even if they don't want to pay for a physical hard copy of the music.
Oh, this is very true, very true. But I'm thinking a lot of the artists that they're going to pay that big money for are artists, what we kind of refer to as classic artists, you know, whether it's the 60s, 70s, or 80s. Mm-hmm. Wondering what, you know, who are the new superstars going to be that are going to last more than 5 or 10 years that our kids are going to want to go see as classics, you know, when they're adults.
Well, Mordechai Ben-David, Isaac Huckelman, I see him as being huge. The Hebraic Joy Orchestra, you never know. They could be enormous, at least in my circle. You haven't heard of these?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Just... But let me ask you also this. How do you, as the co-founder of this nonprofit, Keep Music Alive, and, of course, of Kids Music Day as well, which you and your wife started, how do you counter arguments by parents and school administrators and principals that say, look, we have dwindling funding and tax funding and money coming into schools. We need to pay for computers. We need to pay for textbooks. We need to pay for teachers' salaries. And that kind of has to take precedence over violas and trombones and ocarinas.
Yes, certainly. And you know what? That is a very good argument, and it is hard to counter that, you know, realistically. But we're just trying to make the argument, you know, the counterpoint that, you know, music and arts, you know, when it's included in a child's education, they actually perform better in all those other subjects that they're trying to save, the math, English, and science, and so on. So finding a way to try to keep arts and music in the schools is actually going to, you know, improve those other subjects, you know, and keep kids in schools longer. Graduation rates are higher when there's music and arts. There's just too many arguments, you know, I think, pushing the other way against that.
So when you have this Kids Music Day, which is happening this Friday, explain what that is as opposed to Keep Music Alive, and what are the events that you're doing all over the place?
So Kids Music Day is a holiday that we founded with the purpose of being able to partner with music schools, music retail locations, and other music nonprofits and organizations all around the world, as you noted, to hold different events. event, sometimes they'll do an instrument petting zoo, which sounds like a funny thing.
Yeah, what is that? Wait. What is an instrument petting zoo?
Well, you know, you line up the Fenders and the Gibsons and the Rollins, and you come around and you see which one you like to pet.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Give the kids an opportunity to, like, here, you know, sit here at the drum set, you know, let me show you a few things, and let me see how you like that. All right, you're not really liking that? All right, come over here, spend 5-10 minutes on the piano. Let me show you a few things that you can learn pretty quickly and see how you like that. Kids need to be exposed to different opportunities to experience different things. So sometimes they think they want to do that, you know, they're so into one thing, but until they get exposed to something else, you know, whether it's music, arts, or sports, or some academic, you know, giving them exposure to different opportunities really opens up their horizons and their creativity, which is helpful for everything.
Now, we want to let people know, if you want to find out more about Kids Music Day, there is a website, kidsmusicday.org. kidsmusicday.org. So you have already people who are acting as quote-unquote ambassadors, famous musicians who have lent their name to this. I mentioned before people like Nancy Wilson from Heart and Todd Rundgren. How do you get them on board? How do you start with a little nonprofit funded by you and your wife to getting people like that who have name recognition to give a thumbs up?
Well, it really comes down to persistence. And polite persistence. You know, we reached out to the representatives after we hunted down who their representatives are, because sometimes it's not easy to find them, right? Their managers, their agents, and so on. And then you ask them. And it's a funny thing, and particularly with Julie Andrews, you know, we had actually asked her and her people 4 years ago whether she might be interested in contributing a quote to our book series. And we had never heard anything back. And the lesson here to learn is we kept coming back to them year after year, asking different things. And then 4 years later, they actually came back and said, yes, Julie Andrews would love to be a Kids Music Day ambassador. And you know what? We almost fell on the floor that morning.
What does she have to do in order to, I mean, is it just lending her name, or does she have to go somewhere, wear a crown and greet people? Or, you know, what does that actually mean?
You're absolutely right. You know, being a Kids Music Day ambassador at this point just means that, yes, they're simply lending their name and their image for us to be able to help promote the holiday. They don't actually have to go and be at any particular event. We would certainly love for that to happen, and we think over time, whether it's this year or next year, some of our ambassadors will be involved in the events. But, you know, we're taking baby steps. This is our really fourth year of operation. This is the third annual Kids Music Day. And, you know, it has to grow a little bit each year. It's not something where you can just run out of the gate and everything is exactly the way you hoped it would be in the future.
Oh, sure. No, but if you need someone who has to be an ambassador for klezmer music, I'm on board. You can use my image.
All right.
You can use every single part of me, including the beard. I'm happy to do it in name only. I don't have to be paid. Free food would be nice. But no, just say, Rabbi Saul says that all kids should be exposed to klezmer music at some point, and I'm for that.
Well, we're absolutely going to have to chat about that, Rabbi Saul.
Oh,
I think where you're going.
Wonderful. Now, let's also chat about, you mentioned a book series, but I want to talk about one particular book that I think is your latest one, 88 Plus Ways Music Can Change Your Life. What's in this book?
So the book is kind of like a chicken soup for the music lover soul book would be, if you remember the chicken soup series.
Oh, of course I do.
Inspirational music stories and quotes from musicians and a few non-musicians from all around the world. There's some stories that'll make you laugh, some that'll make you cry, some that'll make you, like, shake your head, like, say, what is that about?
Give us one that'll make us laugh. What's an amusingly funny one?
An amusingly funny one. Well, let's see. So this one has kind of its poignant moments and a chuckle here.
Uh-huh.
So there's a gentleman by the name of Miguel, who is a shaman out in California, and his mother was always very, you know, blessed by the arts and interested in music, and she happened to be a high school teacher and also after that a college professor. But shortly after she retired at 65, Alzheimer's disease started to claim her brain, and it wasn't long before she had to actually, you know, be put under 24-hour care, and the family wasn't really able to take care of her. One day, Miguel, you know, he liked to visit his mother as often as he could, and one day he took her out, you know, on some of the errands he had to run, so, you know, she would be, you know, with him, and he could be with her. So he's driving down the highway, and just out of the blue, he starts singing this song that, you know, his mother used to sing to him when he was a child. It's a song in Spanish because they're originally from Cuba. And he's singing the song, and then just out of the blue, his mother, whose head is normally down at a catatonic state, her head comes up, and she starts singing with him the song in the highway, all the words, all the melody, and he just about crashes the car. Mm. He just can't believe it. His mother's been in this state for a very long time, and she's, like, snapped out of it because he started singing the song from back in the, you know, in the past, from her time when she was young.
Amazing, yeah. The power of La Cucaracha, I'll tell you. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, La Cucaracha, La Cucaracha.
I'm just joking. No, that is a sweet, sweet little story. You also have a story, I think, from a guy who was in the band Bad Company.
Yes, Mr. Simon Kirk, who is the drummer from Free originally, All Right Now was their really huge hit, and among others, and then for Bad Company. And Simon was giving a drum clinic in the UK several years back. And, you know, he's up on the stage, and he's playing, you know, demonstrating different drums in this, you know, this fairly large auditorium. The lights are out, so he can't see the people in the audience. And as he's doing his different demonstrations, he starts hearing this clicking sound coming from somewhere. You know, he feels like it's coming, you know, somewhere in the audience. He can't really identify it. But, you know, Simon's professional. He just, you know, kind of just puts it out of his mind and continues with, you know, demonstrating different drums. He's pulling out different percussion instruments. And just off and on, he just keeps hearing this clicking sound. And, you know, if you're a drummer doing percussion and you're hearing clicking at a different rhythm, it kind of might throw you off.
Of course.
But, he's trying to keep it together. And then, you know, but throughout almost the whole presentation, this clicking sound's going on. And, you know, he's starting to get a little worked up, like, you know, who is making this blast clicking sound when I'm trying to demonstrate the percussion instruments? So finally he comes to the end of the demonstration, and the house lights go up. And for the very first time, he can see in the back of the auditorium is a row of wheelchairs. And there are kids who have muscular dystrophy, and they're holding drumsticks in their hands. And they've been playing with him the entire time. And let me tell you, I think his heart just about fell out of his throat. He jumped off the stage. He ran to the back of the auditorium. He kneeled down next to each and every one of them and shook their hand and said, "Thank you. Thank you so much for playing with me today. I really appreciate it." I think, you know, the first time we read that story, every time I tell that story, I get chills, I get a little tear coming. It's just like, it's such a powerful reminder that you never really know what the real situation is in life. Mm. And you never really know also how music is touching people of all walks of life.
Well, you are trying to touch people with music, and even more so the idea of the importance of music with your foundation, Keep Music Alive, and also, of course, this Kids Music Day that is happening this Friday. For more information about our guest, Vincent James, go to vincentjames.com, and, of course, to kidsmusicday.org. I do have one or two more quick questions for you. You also in the book about the 88 plus, what was that? The 88 ways music can change your life. You have a Harry Chapin story?
Yes. It's a very short little clip. It comes to us from the drummer who played with Harry Chapin. And I'm so sorry, his name escaped me at this very moment. But Harry, you know, was going to the Grammys for the first time. This is, you know, he had a song that was really big at the time. And he was walking into the building, you know, where they were holding the Grammys. I believe it was in L.A. that year. And as he walked in, he was starting to walk in, there was a doorman opening the door for him. And the doorman offered to, you know, hold Harry's guitar as he was coming in. Harry was going to perform that night. And there was just a little bit of a mishap, and all of a sudden the guitar dropped, and it ended up being stepped on and broken right at that moment, you know, just foot through the guitar. And many musicians, you know, many people, you know, you had that happen, such a big night for you, and then all of a sudden your instrument that you're used to playing on is destroyed right in front of you. You might have a little, you might be worked up a little, but not Harry. Harry was like, you know, he was probably like 20, 21 years old. He was freaking out at what he had just, you know, helped happen with Harry's guitar. And Harry's like, "No, bro, don't really worry about it. You know, it's okay. It's all fine. It's all good." And the drummer for the Harry, you know, just wanted to relay that was the kind of person that Harry was. He really never let things get to him, never let things bother him, just a steady hand.
And the whole rest of the night, he played trombone. which is kind of interesting.
You know, they supplied it with the trombone, and the rest is history.
Yeah, yeah. And last question for you, Vincent James, is what is your favorite song of all time?
Oh man, Rabbi Saul, that is such a hard question.
I know.
But I'm gonna shoot to you one that just happens to be one of my all-time favorites, and that has to be a song by the band Genesis called "Behind the Lines."
Any particular reason it just hits you in a certain way, or why?
It has an incredible instrumental introduction. It probably goes on for about 3 minutes. It could be its own song. If you listen to it, it's really powerful. And I often listen to it prior to doing interviews or, you know, anytime I have to do an important phone call. You know, it just pumps me up. It gets me going. And then the rest of the song, you know, has a lot of meaning to me, the lyrics, just from different situations in my life from years gone by. And to me, it's just that those 6 minutes of a song, which you never hear that on the radio anymore, 6 minutes, right? That's way too long. But it just really moves me. And, you know, if you haven't ever heard Behind the Lines by Genesis, I encourage you to check it out.
Well, I got to tell you one thing here is that Vincent James and I now have two things in common, because one is that we both love music and believe in spreading that around to people of all ages. But now you love the band Genesis, and I love the book Genesis from the Torah. So we're on the same page, as it were. And it's been an absolute joy to have you in the neighborhood, Vincent James, from Keeping Music Alive. And I hope it keeps you and your lovely wife alive for many years, and that your organization just grows and becomes even more musical and beautiful as the years go by. Vincent James, thank you for being with us in the neighborhood.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you, Rabbi Saul. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Shalom to you.
Shalom.